Thank you for listening to this episode of Parallel Quest. This is a podcast of Steel Lake Studio. To find out more about us, please head over to steellakestudio.com. Get ready to go on an adventure. Today, we talk about the impact of the Legend of Zelda video game series. Today's episode is all about the Legend of Zelda. We cover just about every single game that we've played in the series and how iconic it was to grow up in the late 90s and early 2000s, having this character, Link, be such an important part of our lives. The Legend of Zelda has been around for a longer time than we've even been alive, and we are so thankful for the great impact it has had on us. So grab your Master Sword and your shield and be ready to go on this journey of Parallel Quest with us. Hello and welcome to Parallel Quest, a podcast where two friends talk about the stories we love and how they've impacted our lives. I'm one of your hosts, Cody Haggard, and alongside me, or maybe better said, across the internet from me, my great friend and co-host, Zach Butler. Zach, how are you doing today?
What's up, Cody? I am doing awesome, man. I am really pumped about the episode and the topic we got ahead of us today. Really, really looking forward to it, man.
Yeah, me too. Today, for you tuning in, we are talking about the Legend of Zelda series, the video games. And this is something that probably, even if you've never played a video game in your life, you've probably heard of the Legend of Zelda because they're just that impactful and that important for the world of video games. And I think in pop culture in general, Zelda has a huge influence. But before we get jumping into our main topic at hand, Zach, anything interesting going on in your life in between our last episode and now?
So actually, I just finished watching a documentary. And I won't say the name because it's kind of an edgy name, but it's on Netflix right now. And it's all about this murder case. Is kind of how I'll allude to it, but what's interesting about it, and what I've kind of been thinking for a little while, and then this documentary made the point very clear at the end of it, was kind of like this obsession right now Netflix and streaming websites have with these murder mystery / like murder shows that are just everywhere, honestly. We got like CIS and like all those mainstream ones. But then on Netflix, you kind of have all these documentaries about like famous like serial killers and stuff. And
yeah, they just did that Ted Bundy movie not too long ago.
They did two of them. They did two of them back to back. They did like the one with Zac Efron, and then they did a documentary, which it was just, I don't know if that was meant to be or if just like coincidentally both of them came out that gave you both sides of the story, because I think the one with Zac Efron, which I did watch, is more from, interesting enough, like Ted's and his girlfriend's side of the story, and then the documentary is kind of what everyone knows Ted Bundy for. Right. But the point that the documentary I just watched was making was like, hey, don't you think it's about time we kind of turn this thing off? Like, isn't this getting a bit too much? We're watching a lot. Like, I watched Mike Birbiglia's new stand-up, and he kind of joked about it where he's like, him and his wife will snuggle up together and get on our couch and we'll watch a documentary about murder. It's like, like we're going to kind of have a nice like date night together where we watch something about murder. And it's just like our cultures right now, especially Netflix, is just obsessed with like these murder and psychopath documentaries and shows even. And I mean, I've been into them hook, line and sinker. But I just, it's curious to me. It's like, what does that say about like the pop cultural psyche right now in America?
There's something about it, and it's not even just like the here and now. Think about how long Law and Order SVU has been on. And when you think of the premise of the show, now it's not murder, so to speak. Not every episode is murder, but there's a lot of murder in SVU. But the whole show's premise is you've got a detective unit that specializes in finding people who are committing sex crimes. That's like the darkest of dark stuff when you think about it. This is the kind of stuff that we don't really want to talk about. It's disturbing to us.
No, but yet you're not talking about this in your day-to-day conversation.
It's a show that's been on for like 18 years or something like that. It's had a long run. And
oh, yeah.
It's so strange. It's funny that you mentioned that. I know exactly what documentary you're talking about. My wife was telling me the yesterday, I got home from work. And I was watching the trailer for this because I popped on Netflix or whatever. I was going to watch some Parks and Recreation because that's how I like to unwind with some good with yes. some good mockumentary comedy.
Yes.
And anyway, the trailer for this documentary pops up and she's like, oh, yeah, I had to turn this off because the kids were watching this earlier today. And I'm like, what? Yeah, I think because what happens is, like, we have a kid's account on our Netflix, but I think they might have just turned it on to ours, right? And whenever they've got a new thing, like a brand new thing, that's the first thing that starts playing, right? So
I don't think
they were actually watching the documentary. I think the trailer was just running because they hit Netflix on and off it goes. But it's just like, that's an intense topic, and I understand getting hooked into it. It's just kind of a funny story, shifting gears slightly, but also staying on topic. On Haz and I's honeymoon, she was super duper sick. I don't know if you remember this, but at our wedding and leading up to our wedding, like, Haz was just not feeling well at all. And so we went on our honeymoon, and she just still continued to not feel well. She was in the hospital a couple days before that. And anyway, we spent a lot of time just kind of chilling out in the hotel room, and you know, we watched one day we basically just kind of watched TV all day. So lame, right? But she just didn't want to get up and go anywhere. And we got hooked into one of those murder mystery shows. I don't think it was Unsolved Mysteries. I think it was something else. But we ended up watching this thing for like 5 hours straight. And it was just like, you get hooked into it, man. Like, you want to know what happened. You want to know how these psychopaths get away with it and like what the next one's going to do. There's just something strange and addicting about it. It's disturbing how addicting it is, but I'm right there with you.
I think it's like the certain level of genius behind some of them. Because that's what was so fascinating to me about the one I just watched was the guy was completely insane. Like, he was a psychopath to the definition. But there was a certain level of genius that was like, a lot of this was planned. And he had to think out and like have these people on the internet chase him and figure, and he was dropping clues to like what his next thing would be and where he would be at. And it was just, to me, that's what fascinated me the most, was there was a deep level of thought and like genius to it. And I think I turned to Leah, my wife, at one point. I was like, just think what this guy could have done and could have accomplished if he had chosen to like done this with engineering or something, like something that's productive to society rather than doing what he did. But it was just like, man, the potential that this person had and could have used for good, but instead chose it to do something like what he did.
Right.
I was just like, man, this is, I don't know. There was I think that to me, that's what I come back to with these shows is there's a certain level of genius with all these people that just use it for the wrong thing. And unfortunately that wrong thing is usually murder, but we just have this fascination as a nation right now with like murder shows and documentaries and podcasts even. I mean, I found myself looking through my podcast todays and I was like, man, why do I listen? Like three murder podcasts on my list of things to listen to. I was like, what is going on? Like, I need to turn this off and start, like, I don't know, listening to like nice shows again. I don't know.
Yeah.
Start watching The Office again.
I wonder if part of it has to do with, for 99% of us, that mindset, that way of thinking is so foreign, right? It's so different. So it makes it intriguing at the same time. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but it could.
No, absolutely. Yeah, it could.
It could. But that was a good little introduction discussion there. And I think that doesn't necessarily segue nicely into our main topic, but we're going to move on anyway. We're going to talk about the traditional hero, more to speak, in the Legend of Zelda series. He's not a psychopath. He's not a murderer. His name is Link. Mm-mm. He's a hero, sometimes called the Hero of Time. And he is one of the most iconic heroes in video games, probably one of the most iconic heroes for people in between the ages of 20 and 40 at this time. If you're in between the ages of 20 and 40, there is a good chance you grew up loving, adoring, and appreciating Link, the main character from the Legend of Zelda series, which leads us to wanting to talk about the Legend of Zelda game series today and how the story has impacted our lives, how the games impacted our lives, how it's impacted our culture. But, Zach, this is one that you wanted to talk about. This is one on your list of choices. What was the reason why you wanted to kind of bring the Legend of Zelda series into Parallel Quest discussion? We won't give our whole talk here, but just a little introduction on why you wanted to do Legend of Zelda today.
Yeah, I think the big reason why is because Zelda has kind of always been a part of my life. Some of my first memories are playing Zelda on the N64 and playing it with my mom. And it's a really vivid memory for me because I never played video games with my mom. My mom was not a video game person. Not to say that she didn't want them in the house or didn't want me playing them, but she had a lot better things and adult things to be doing than sitting down and playing video games. So, but it was the first game that like captured her attention, and she was a very integral part of me beating the first Zelda game that I ever played. And so it's a very strong memory for me. I was 8 years old when I started playing it. And from there, it's always been a part of my life. So for me, it's just, I've grown up with Link, even to now with Breath of the Wild getting released last year. Despite the fact that I haven't really played too many games since some of the earlier ones. But it feels like Link I've seen now is a little older. He feels like he's grown up with me. And the storylines I feel like have gotten a little more serious too. They definitely play towards like the generational crowd. So, to me, it was a strong memory from my childhood. And I feel like so many people when I was growing up, so many of my friends could just relate to playing Zelda, because the unique thing about Zelda is everyone who's played Zelda or has interacted with Zelda loves to talk about it and loves to like dissect it and talk about their favorite boss battle, because they all have really unique boss battles. They like to talk about their favorite temple, or which is something that the player, for those of you who don't know, is temples are a big thing in the Zelda world, where a player goes in and has to solve a bunch of puzzles to beat the boss. But everyone talks about it, but it's a solo game. Like, there's not a multiplayer aspect to these games. So it's so unique that everyone kind of comes together on it and loves to talk about it and experience it as if we all did it together. But you only can play Zelda as a one-player mode. So it's just one of those games that has a lot of first. It was a lot of firsts for the video games. It's a huge iconic game for the adventure genre. But it's also just everyone who's played a video game has probably played Zelda. So everyone can kind of relate at some level to what it's like to play Link.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you on that. And we're going to go into our section here really quickly before we talk about our how it's impacted our lives, our thoughts, our experiences with it, do our little history lesson, a little history on The Legend of Zelda. And Zach, if you want to chime in with some of the stuff you found in here too, feel free to interject at any time. I'm just going to run through some things on my list here. Excuse me, I just got to clear my throat real quick. First thing I want to say is that The Legend of Zelda, the very first game that came out for the Nintendo Entertainment System, was an early powerhouse game for the Nintendo Entertainment System. Kind of like the first adventure game on the NES that seemed to be quite accessible as well as just rather large. I remember The Legend of Zelda not being particularly easy either. I never completed it. I never beat it. But I believe that my brothers did. And I know it was kind of a challenging game for us to get through. And granted, we were just kids playing this, but it was iconic. It was a game that people really, really cherished because it gave this adventurous aspect to it that wasn't common in a lot of games. Now, there were games that did it in the past. There was Adventure, which was on the Atari, but nothing did it to the graphical quality or fidelity that The Legend of Zelda did. And I think one of the biggest parts of The Legend of Zelda is that iconic soundtrack, that iconic music that as soon as boot up The Legend of Zelda, you know that theme song, right? It's it's crazy. Dun 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 dun. Right?
Yes.
And yep. It's so good. It is fantastic. It's phenomenal. It's iconic. And this is a very successful game for Nintendo. And Zach, you found out something kind of interesting about Legend of Zelda that I didn't know. So what is the little piece of history that you shared with me earlier? I thought that was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, so before we started to record, we were just kind of talking over some of the points and just kind of Zelda in general. And I brought up the fact that the first Zelda game called The Legend of Zelda in 1986 was originally made for the Famicom Disk System. Now, a lot of you out there are like, I never owned that. Or what the heck is that? Was that an arcade or something? No, it was a peripheral attachment to the Nintendo's family computer home video game console. And this thing, which if you see a picture of it, it's like this, it looks like it should be a transformer or something where it's like all compacted and eventually it's going to become a robot. But it was only released in Japan. And so the first game was made for this system. And the most interesting thing about it, other than the fact that this system existed that played Zelda, was that the games that it played were floppy disks. So Legend of Zelda and Metroid were both made for this game system. And both of them, the entirety of the game was on these disk cards or these floppy disks. So that was pretty interesting. And for those of you who maybe are younger and don't know what floppy disks are, there were these black floppy, as the name is, little squares that you'd plug into computers and they'd have Math Blaster and like other small games on them. But if you can imagine the Zelda game, what it is now, like it's not that big on the floppy disk, obviously, yeah. But just the style and the music and the kind of charm that Zelda has was all in this like transformer looking system.
Yeah, that's really cool. And it's neat because, you know, I didn't think about the fact that they were trying to push a new piece of technology with it. And I'm glad that it was able to get on the traditional Nintendo Entertainment System, or the Famicom as it was called in Japan, because it made it more accessible. And the The first game was very good. It was very successful. And then the second game came out, The Adventures of Link, and that was actually kind of a step back for the series. It was very strange. It was very odd. They changed how everything worked. They had this like 2D battling system that was really, really difficult. It was really punishing. And it was, I think it was a struggle for a lot of people to go from The Legend of Zelda to The Adventures of Link. And then Link to the Past, Super Nintendo, kind of went back to form, kind of followed that traditional Zelda formula. And from Link to the Past going forward, like every Zelda game that's come out has been highly rated, like by critics and fans alike. These games are just very, very much adored. And so just a very light introduction to the concept of the story and how Zelda games play out. So the reason they're called The Legend of Zelda is that one of the main characters in the game is Princess Zelda, who within the story arc is a princess who is blessed with magical powers. She typically has magical abilities in all of the games and is a very powerful princess, but there is an evil villain, typically Ganon. Sometimes he is an actual person. Sometimes he's more like an evil energy in some adaptations. Breath of the Wild kind of being the one that leans into this heavily. And and so there's this evil named Ganon, and then there's this princess who is very powerful. It's kind of a very traditional light versus darkness story. And and so Link is the hero, and Link is appointed with the task of saving Princess Zelda, the representative, the light magic, the light side of the story, and kind of saving her, helping her. That's kind of how I think the story is more, is you are helping Zelda be freed from the powers of Ganon, because it's not like Zelda is a damsel in distress by any means.
Yeah.
She's like super,
that was the cool
super
thing.
Powerful.
Yeah, that was the difference in Zelda was... When you played it, Zelda was a very capable person.
Right.
She was never like, oh, like she wasn't like Peach. She wasn't like Mario going to rescue Peach. She very much was assured, and she was very wise, and she understood everything going on. And it was just like, Link, you need to come alongside me so we can beat this, because two of us together will be able to beat it. Me alone won't be able to. So that was always... It was kind of a different take for me, especially coming from playing Mario, where it's like you're the hero and Peach is always getting captured.
Yep. Yep. And the story formula for The Legend of Zelda games is there are many games in the series, but they are not sequels one to the next. Each one is its own self-contained story that takes place within the Zelda mythology. So if you could imagine it, say there's like an overarching idea of the mythology of what The Legend of Zelda is, but each game is a different way of telling that story. There's always going to be the hero, who's going to be Link. There's always going to be the powerful princess, who's going to be Zelda. There's always going to be the evil force, who most of the times is Ganon. Not always. And so every installment in the series tells this story in a slightly different way, which I think that makes it very interesting, because as someone who's played the games for a while, you go in with certain expectations, but it's always interesting to see how certain things are done differently every time. And I think that's kind of a cool way to tell stories within games, even though Nintendo has spoken out and said, hey, they don't really focus on telling stories in games. They focus on making games fun. Zelda has been a series of games that I think has given us memorable story moments. And I think the reason why is because the game actually typically, except for Breath of the Wild that I've played, typically they follow some format of the hero's journey. There's always a point in the game where you get so close and you actually think you're close to the end of the game, but then for some reason or another, you're unable to complete the task, right? And then it's like, boom, there's your fall as the hero, and then you got to rise back up to the top, right? And so, and so the games kind of follow that format of storytelling, which is why I think it's so engaging for us as people who've played them, grew up playing them as kids, is you really feel like you're working and progressing, getting more powerful as you go through this game to defeat this evil force, this bad guy who is basically the the manifestation of pure evil and darkness, right? Wanting darkness to rule over everything. And you go through, you save the princess, and you beat the bad guy. And it's just a really rewarding thing when you do it, because there's a lot of tough challenges along the way. The temples, the puzzles, all that stuff's very challenging. And especially for a kid, I remember some of those dungeons and those temples being extremely challenging when I was young.
The water temple.
Like, Ocarina of Time in particular, and I think it's because of the age at which we would have been playing, it just seemed so, so hard. But there's a little brief history lesson, and then, Zach, I'll let you talk if I missed anything or if you just want to start sharing your experiences, your stories with Zelda games. Go ahead and jump right in.
Yeah, no, you definitely hit the history on the head there. What was cool about it too is, because it is fantasy, so you kind of play this elf character, but there's all these different like kind of races. And so someone who at the time I didn't know Lord of the Rings, but as I got older, I was like, I felt like in a way I was in a Lord of the Rings kind of environment, because you have this world to explore, these characters and these races to meet. But was funny to me was when my first exposure to The Legend of Zelda was playing A Link to the Past. I think that's what the one. I was telling you earlier, I always get Link's Awakening. That's the one.
Yeah.
I still can't get it right. I always get them mixed up because they're both 2D, which was how they originally came out. And then the covers for Link's Awakening and A Link to the Past were almost identical. I think they almost, like, I think other than the fact that one says Link's to the Past and Link's Awakening, I think they have that gold background with the sword between the, or going through the Z.
The sword and the shield behind the Z.
Yeah, I think it's like all the same. So, but what I found confusing when I first played it was called The Legend of Zelda, or like Link to the Past or Link's Awakening. And it's always The Legend of Zelda, semicolon, then the actual title of the game. And so I thought I was Zelda playing these games because, like, it's in the title. You figure the title character is going to be in the title of the game. And what's not true is you don't play Zelda, you play Link. And so I remember I played it and people kept calling me Link. And I was like, what the heck? Like, no, I'm Zelda, aren't I? And I even named my original account. If I could go and find my Game Boy Advance or my Game Boy Color game, it would say Zelda as my account name because I thought I would be playing Zelda instead of Link. And I didn't really understand it until I started playing Ocarina of Time that was not the case, that
right,
you play Link.
Right, yeah. And I believe in the original Legend of Zelda, I don't think they ever say the name Link. I could be wrong, but in that game, I believe you just kind of name your character whatever you want, and like Nintendo had named the character Link, but unless you were reading Nintendo Power or you had some outside information telling you that, or you read maybe the game manual, you wouldn't have known.
Because who did that?
Well, back then it was different, right? Back then you kind of had to read the game manual to know how to play for certain games, and now all of how to play the game is built in the game. They don't even put game manuals in games anymore. They haven't done that for years.
I haven't. I remember when I used to buy Xbox games, I would go to school with the game manual and just read it cover to cover, even though it might have been the second installment or third installment of a game. I would still read it, even though I know all the controls are the same. It's just like, okay, what more lore could you get out of it?
Yeah.
You're right. I didn't really read too much when I was 8 or 9 years old.
No, not at that age. But I remember getting super into the lore tidbits in game manuals and stuff like that. The Final Fantasy games had good lore tidbits on each character. They always had a little paragraph on each character, where they came from, what their story arc was, and anyway, we can't start talking Final Fantasy. That's for another episode.
Yeah, we'll get you off on a tangent there.
But
yeah, the first one I played, though, was A Link to the Past.
Link's Awakening.
Okay, I'm going to get it right.
You're going to get
Promise.
It.
Promise. I'm going to get it. I'm going to be talking about Link's Awakening. That's the one. That was the very first one that I played. But I didn't really know what I was doing in it until, I didn't really understand. I knew what I was doing in it. I didn't understand Zelda until I played Ocarina of Time. And I think for a lot of people, this is where like the love of video games probably started from an early age, just because Ocarina of Time for many, many, even magazines and people are, it, that's like the best video game ever made. Like hands down, there's a lot of people that say it was one of the best games ever made. And I think it, because like what you mentioned earlier, it follows the hero's story very closely, like probably more closely than anyone else or any other game. Ocarina of Time, just, it's such a great game. It hit my life when I was 8 years old. And I mean, if we want to get into to our thoughts and stuff on it, we definitely can. But yeah, it hit my life at an early age where it was my second video game I ever played other than Mario. So I got my N64, I played Mario, beat that in like a month. And then I think that's when my parents got me Zelda. And they got me that because I'd mentioned it or something in the store of like, oh yeah, I like that game or whatever. And so they got me it and I played that game till like I knew I could probably close my eyes and walk through the first three temples and beat them. Just, I played that so much, so stinking much.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was, I mean, Zelda, the Ocarina of Time to me starts the Zelda journey for me. I know there's Game Boy games and stuff that come in between and come before, and NES games, but for me, Ocarina of Time is kind of like the genesis of Zelda, and for a good reason, because they really do get into, which was interesting, because a lot of kids playing it were between the ages of like 7 and 10 at the time, and they go really deep into like the history of this planet and Hyrule, and like they give you the whole history of how everything was created at the very beginning of the game.
Yeah.
Which I didn't realize until I was like much older that that's what that was, because I would sit there with my N64 controller and just pound the A button because I was like, skip it, skip it, skip it, skip it. I just want to start playing.
Yeah,
like,
just get into it. Yeah. Swing the sword around a little bit.
Until I got older, I read it and I was like, oh my gosh, there's a lot to this game. At the time, I was like, I don't care. I don't care. I don't care.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and tell our story. So basically, when it comes to Legend of Zelda games, there's three in particular that I have very, very important events that I want to talk about. So for me, my three would be Ocarina of Time, Wind Waker, and Breath of the Wild. I want to talk about those specifically, but Zach, I'll go ahead and let you go first because you were super excited about Ocarina of Time. We'll let you just kind of keep going with it. And for anyone who might not have listened to our first episode, you went into some details about your experience with Ocarina of Time with that too. So I think some of that stuff will be good to talk back and forth here for a minute because it was definitely a big impact on you.
Yeah, I mean, it is probably my favorite game, so it's really easy for me to just kind of go with it. And even now with the like Breath of the Wild coming out, and I recently saw some YouTube videos of these people who really like dive into Legend of Zelda and the meanings behind certain things, and they get very philosophical on it to the point where I'm like, oh man, are we even talking about the same game anymore? But it's, to me, it's just, it's a huge nostalgia factor. Like I mentioned earlier, it was the first game that I played. It was actually the only game I really ever played with my mom. And I remember that she had to, every time we came to the parts with the Reeds, which are these zombie-like creatures that if they saw you, they would scream really loudly and you'd freeze. Your character would freeze and you couldn't move, and then they'd come over and suck the life out of you. And it, as an eight-year-old, it terrified me. Like, I was, like, and any eight-year-old, I would hope, would just be, like, terrified to see these zombie creatures come over and start knocking away at your health. And so my mom would have to get me through those parts. So I would get to the part where I knew I'd have to go past the read-eds, and I would hand my controller to my mom, and I would leave the room so I couldn't hear them. I didn't even want to hear them. And so I'd leave the room, and then I would hear her call me. She's like, "All right, Zach, you can come back." And then I would come back into the room, and I'd be past the part.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so my mom would always, anytime, we'd always have to, which was funny because there comes a certain point in the game in Ocarina of Time where you jump ahead 7 years. So you go from being a kid to being a teenager, and you, the entire town that you're in, they all turn to read-eds, which is both funny and like horrific. But like everyone you just met is now a read-ed. And so every time you left the Temple of Time to go out into the world, which you had to do literally any time you saved the game and turned it off, yeah, and then turned it back on when you were an adult, you would have to go through the same square with all the read-eds.
Yeah.
My mom would have to come into the room,
every walk day me out of the you town. Started it up.
Every day, every single time, man. Like, she would have to do it. And so that's how I would start my game. I'd load it up, hand my controller to my mom, walk out of the room, come back, start my adventure.
That's awesome. That's great, yeah, man.
So I have very fond memories of it.
I've always loved your mom, but I find out, the more I find out about her, the greater she is, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, she was a true hero in this game, man.
Yeah, for sure. That's great. Like, and the thing that I remember about Ocarina of Time in particular is when it came out, and I think the Legend of Zelda games have this, and a lot of the things we talk about on this podcast have this, or at least in our own lives had this, is like when Ocarina of Time came out, that was an event. That wasn't just like a video game came out and there was something new to buy in the store. I remember it came out and there were kids in my neighborhood who bought it. I never owned the game for Nintendo 64. I always had to play it from either borrowing it from somebody or there might have been ways to play it on your computer at some point in the future. What are those called? ROMs. I might have done that.
Oh yeah,
might have done that. I might not have done that. I don't know. I don't remember.
But we've all gone down that path.
But I remember it came, and it was an event, man. Like I don't know if it came out in the summer, but I remember the summer that it came out, there was a lot less kids outside than in previous yeah. summers. And it was like, yeah. What's going on? Well, everyone's over at so-and-so's house, and they're playing Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, or they're watching so-and-so play Legend of Zelda. And
yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
It's playing like, man, together was watching everyone was doing it. And it took us, as kids, it took us so long to beat. And anyone who's around our age or older will understand this. Before you could go to the internet for help, and you could at this time, but for example, like me, at this time, I didn't even have internet in my house. Like, we didn't even have it. So, you know, to go online and look up a guide or whatever, was it just didn't even cross your mind.
And, we didn't even know what that was.
Right, right. And so you would have to try and solve these temples, these puzzles, figure out or remember what the songs were. It's like, oh man, there's like a lot going on here. I remember it being an event, and when someone beat that game, it was like an accomplishment. It was in your groups of friends, you like high-fived each other. It was a celebration, like, I finally beat Ocarina of Time, man. And it was so That's cool. Right. It was so fun. And it was one of those things where, even though I never owned it, is an important game to me because I played it so much. I played it so many times at this point, and I think I've started the game at least a half a dozen times, and I think I've only finished it once, but and that was later on when I was in college. Yeah, I finished it for the first time when I was in college.
Wow.
But played it a lot.
How easy was it for you in college compared to what you thought of it as a kid?
Oh man, it was still challenging, like the puzzles and stuff. So they still challenge your brain. But when you're older, you just have the hand-eye coordination from playing so many years of video games. So combat and stuff like that, outside of the jankiness of being on the N64, wasn't all that bad.
You had to have like a third arm to play that controller.
But it's one of those things. I just remember everyone was involved in it in some way, shape, or form, whether you owned it or you didn't. You were into it. You were interested in it. It took the neighborhood by storm. It was really cool, man. I just remember it being huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the thing. Like, everyone was talking about it. Everyone, before the internet, the only way to get more information about what you needed to do next was to talk to somebody who had already gotten past the point that you're at to tell you what to do to solve the puzzle. Mm-hmm. And I was that friend for a lot of people, because I was the only one of my friends that bought the strategy guide.
Ah, you and got the strategy guide.
Back in the day, you couldn't go on the internet. You couldn't get on your phone. You had to go to a store. You had to buy a thick colored book specifically for your game. And it would tell you how to beat every single level, how to unlock all the things in the level. And I thought I was king at that point.
Strategy guides are the bomb, man. I love strategy guides.
Oh, they're awesome, man. Because then they also teach you, like, they teach you about the lore of the game. They teach you about the history and everything. So it's just another way of getting a little more into your game. But the interesting thing about the strategy guide for Zelda was, I feel like the people writing it, like you said, it's complicated. Like, the puzzles are a little complicated, but they're not like super challenging. So I think the people writing it were like, why are we like, it's not that hard to beat this level. And I always want to be like, you've never played the Water Temple, man. You don't know. Like, you don't know about raising and lowering the level of the water to get to the right floor. For like that Water Temple alone, that strategy guide was worth it. I don't think I could have done it without it the first time, because none of my friends got ahead of me. I was always the one ahead because I had the strategy guide.
I still think that's like notoriously the most frustrating temple for most people who've played Zelda games, because
it's the first time I threw my controller.
Not only is it challenging, it is legitimately frustrating. It doesn't make
sense. Yeah, I mean, it's beyond challenging. It's just frustrating. It's just not fair. Like, it's just you get defeated. It's the first time a lot of kids feel defeat, where it's just like, I don't understand this. I don't know why I have to mess around. And then once you finally get to the part, you got to fight the shadow version of yourself, which there's only certain techniques you can do to injure it and hurt it and kill it. So it's just, like, every part of that temple is just completely unfair.
Yeah. So, did you end up playing Majora's Mask or not?
So, I did, because I finished Ocarina of Time, and I just couldn't wait for the next Zelda game. So, I immediately went out once it was released, and I got it. And I remember playing it and just not liking it. I couldn't get into, I thought it was going to be, I mean, my young self wanted just Ocarina of Time Part 2. I just wanted to do all the cool things and unlock all the things I did in Ocarina of Time. But then they added that time element in Majora's Mask. And did you ever play it?
Yes.
Okay. Where you had 3 days basically to save the world, but you could manipulate time basically. And I just didn't like, I like the freedom of exploration that Ocarina of Time lent itself to, where I feel like in Majora's Mask, because you were always kind of pressed for time, you couldn't just kind of stop and just look at everything and be like, oh man, I'm in this town. Like, what does this even look like? Or what does this shop look like? Like, I enjoy just the free roaming aspect of Ocarina of Time that Majora's Mask was just it was good. Don't get me wrong. Like, it was a good story. It was a cool, like, they did some really cool things with the masks. Like, they really got into that, and it was cool to kind of become different people in the game. But I just couldn't ever stop and just enjoy the game, because I always felt like, okay, the moon's gonna hit the planet. I gotta get moving here. I can't stop. I gotta do the next thing. Yeah. So I don't know what you thought of the game, but I remember just not really enjoying it as much.
I didn't play it much, and I can't remember exactly when Majora's Mask came out, but I want to say by the time my brother and I got a hold of a copy of Majora's Mask, we either had gotten a PlayStation 2 already, or we were just or we got one shortly after it. And I remember playing it a little bit and kind of thinking, I just thought, and I think a lot of people think this about Majora's Mask, the game's just kind of trippy. The aesthetic of it is very strange. And I know there's a lot of Majora's Mask apologists out there. There are some people who that is their favorite Zelda game. And that's totally fine. That's completely fine. I still think it is a good game for all intents and purposes. I think it definitely checks off all the boxes of being a good game. For me, I just didn't really get into it as much. I was starting to move into wanting to be more into that PlayStation 2, that really edgy side of video gaming,
yeah.
which I think PlayStation 2 and then PlayStation 3, those were the times where I was very interested in, like, the new technology. Now, I'm just more interested in, like, interesting game design. I don't really care about the graphics anymore. It's like, if you give me an interesting concept, you give me an interesting design, I'll play it. I don't care. It could be just black and white squares, whatever. If it's interesting, I'll give it a shot.
I think a lot of, not to get too far off topic, but I think in that vein, like, a lot of Steam games are proving that, where it's not so much the awesome graphics and how realistic you can be, and I want to see the rain, and I want to know that that's real water.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's can you come up with a cool looking style to a game and tell a captivating story with that style? Doesn't matter if it's awesome or not, because there's a lot of 2D games that come out on Steam that, like, are awesome stories and awesome games, but they look like Mario games from back in the day, like these pixelated Mario games, but people will be like, you need to play that game, it's so good. And you get on and you're like, well, this looks like an NES game,
right?
But then it turns out to be awesome. So I think that's that. I mean, Zelda had a unique looking style to it. It had a fantasy element and things were colorful and it had everything going for it that way. But then it also told really cool stories.
Yep. And kind of speaking on the cutting edge and what was new and shiny and pretty, I did just look it up real quick. Majora's Mask did come out in the United States in October of 2000. And the PlayStation 2 came out just a few weeks after that. So,
oh wow!
So my brother and I, we got our PlayStation 2 in January of 2001. We tracked one down at a KB Toys in the mall. But
man,
that's a different story for a different time. That's a good story. And anyway, so speaking of edgy graphics and new and shiny things, unless you have something more to say about Majora's Mask, that brings us to Wind Waker.
Oh, no, let's move on. Let's move on.
So, Legend of Zelda Wind Waker, my first impressions of this game were, what is this? Zelda for babies? What's going on here? What's with this art style? Why are we doing this cel-shaded thing? This looks dumb. We have all this new technology. Why aren't we making games that look better? Why aren't we making more games that look like Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3? I want to see Zelda look more realistic, right? And so kind of had this snobby attitude towards it. And I was like, I'm not even going to play it, right? I'm just going to ignore it. And so I had a friend who picked it up. He played it, raved about it. And I was like, dude, come on, it's probably not even that good. Look at the graphics. And he's like, trust me, man, it's good. And I think at this point we were in junior high or close to it. So he let me borrow it. and I played this game, put it in my game. I literally played this game nonstop until I beat it. I was so hooked on this game. And I remember almost feeling like embarrassed that I liked it. If that makes any sense. Because everybody railed on this game back in the day. People made fun of the graphics. I think people had low expectations. But really, when you play Wind Waker, it is a phenomenal game. It's actually probably my favorite Zelda setting. I love the archipelago island atmosphere of it. I love the sailing. I love traversing through water. Now, these are all story concepts that interest me, so it makes sense that I would like that. I like how they integrate pirates and stuff like that.
Yeah.
For me, this is my favorite Zelda game to play. I've beaten it 3 times. I specifically went out and bought a Wii U just to play this game in HD, and I think it was worth it at the time, but the Wii U just didn't live up to any other expectations.
You went from you barely beating probably the most iconic Zelda game to beating it 3 times with probably the most controversial one at the time, but now probably one of the most beloved.
Oh yeah,
of them all.
Now people all love Zelda, and I think that's because
you were ahead of your time, man. You're the hipster.
Well, I think people who played it when they were young did like it. Those just weren't the people who were critiquing or reviewing the game at the time. You know, those are all adults, right? But the one thing I will say is, interesting thing tying into Wind Waker, I got the Wii U with Wind Waker, and there wasn't really a lot of games I was interested in playing on the Wii U at the time. So I went and I bought like the Virtual Console Classic, The Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past, after beating Wind Waker again. And then I played through Link to the Past, the Super Nintendo version of Legend of Zelda, and that is one of my favorites as well. That is a phenomenal game. Zach, if you have not played that one, you got to play that one. It's incredible.
It's the one I always think I play, but
it's the one, it's the one you think you've played, but you haven't, but it's phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, I remember with Wind Waker that I was one of those people that was skeptical. Like, I love the realistic in quotes, of Majora's Mask and Ocarina of Time. And when they came out with Wind Waker, I just remember sitting down, it opening up, and it plays like the little movie at the beginning of what's going on. And then you come into that cartoony look of the game. And I just remember being like, what the heck? Like, yeah, you're right. This is for babies. Are they only going to make games for 10-year-olds? Or are they going to move on? Like, I don't get this. And then even when you'd fight the enemies, like they poof in that cartoony cloud, it would just kind of like disappear like they would in the other games. There's like this cartoon poof. And I was like, man, this is all just like a little too kiddie. But then you just, like you said, you get out onto the open ocean and it just, the world is just before you, even bigger than the previous two games. And it was just so, it was probably a lot of people's, especially mine, my first interaction with a semi-open world game where you could just kind of get on your little ship and go anywhere.
Yeah.
And you'd run into islands and they pop up on your map and you just go and explore. And that was the coolest thing, was just like sailing around in your ship and exploring the map and diving into new undiscovered dungeons and stuff. And this was before Skyrim and Morrowind and all that. So it was the sense of adventure was kind of reignited in a lot of people, especially me. I think Wind Waker is probably my second favorite Zelda. I still think Ocarina of Time holds that special spot, but Wind Waker is a very, very close second.
Yeah, great game. Quick question. What did you think about, this is the only thing I didn't like about Wind Waker, but they fixed it in the HD version, the Triforce pieces Do you remember that? Having to get all...
Having to go around and collect them all.
And they were hidden. They were pretty tough. I remember I had to use a guide for that because I just didn't have the patience for that.
Yeah.
And there was nine of them. There was many. There was three pieces for each triangle in the Triforces.
Each part. Yeah. Three were broken into three more. Yeah, to me, that was like, how can we kind of extend this game a little bit?
Right.
That's, I mean, even my young self was like, why? I don't really need to do this, do I? Like, let's just move on to the next. But it did seem like, how can we sink like five more hours into this game?
Yeah, it took a long time. It was tough.
It took so long, man. It was so long. And it wasn't really all that rewarding because you didn't really get too much out of it other than getting the piece. It would have been something else if, like, every piece you got, like, a new ability or a new piece of equipment. But a lot of times, it's like, here's 50 rupees.
Right.
Also, question for you. What did you think of the character Tingle in The Wind Waker?
Tingle? He's the guy who's dressed like the jester, right?
Yeah, he's dressed like the karaoke forest... I don't know how you say it. The forest people, the forest kids.
Yeah. I mean, he felt like kind of the comic relief of it. There's always a character like that in a lot of, especially Japanese influenced stories. And I mean, it's whatever. But I actually thought that the iterations of all the characters in there were really strong. I really liked the implementation of Princess Zelda in that one in particular, because she's very much involved in the story from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really cool. I guess that's kind of a minor spoiler if you haven't played the game before. Anyway, whoops. It's an old game. You should have played it already. And if not, it doesn't ruin the game. Trust me.
No.
But yeah.
Yeah, that was the cool thing at the beginning was you didn't really know what was going on. Like,
right.
You were a Link, but you had a sister. It was all different. Yeah.
Yeah. All very different. I thought it was a good spin on the thought. Tingle, I mean, kind of annoying. Also kind of funny. He's kind of stuck around with Zelda mythology, though.
He must have been a fan favorite. I thought he was more like Jar Jar Binks, but people really got a kick out of him because he was in the Super Smash Brother games. Like, he was floating around in the background for some of the levels. I was like, man, this guy's really taking off. He's got a good career ahead of him.
So for all of you super duper Legend of Zelda fans out there, I apologize. I personally did not play Twilight Princess, and I played Skyward Sword for a good hour before I just decided it wasn't for me. The Wii era was rough for me. I had absolutely no liking for the Nintendo Wii. It was highly disappointing for me. Basically everything that came on that console, I skipped. Even the Mario Galaxy games, loved them, tried them. I just hated playing games with sticks. It was just really frustrating. And so I didn't really get into either one of those. And Zach, you mentioned before we started, you only played a little bit of Twilight Princess.
Yeah, I played the very beginning, and was that the one that came out right after Wind Waker, or was there one in between?
Yeah. Twilight Princess was the one right after Wind Waker. So it came out on Wii and GameCube. So you could have bought it for either one.
I just felt like it was even more removed from a Zelda game. And I know, there's fans out there that are like, this is the best one. Like, I get it. It is a great game, I'm sure, if I played it all the way through. So I'm definitely speaking from a very limited like source of knowledge here, but I don't know. It just felt even more removed from like a true Zelda game. They got really into like the shape shifting stuff. I don't know. It just felt really weird to me, and I couldn't get into it. So I only played the very beginning of it. And then I put Zelda down for a very long time after that. I think Wind Waker, I can honestly say, was the last like Zelda game that I played from start to finish, and probably played it two or three times. But I mean, I put it down after that. I was like you. I didn't really like the Wii. I didn't like swinging sticks around, and I got really into the Xbox 360 at that point, and just kind of was a Microsoft like fanboy. So it was a long time until I got back into Zelda again. So it kind of, my dark eras was Zelda. I knew they came out, but I just wouldn't play them, and I didn't really have anyone around me that owned them. So there just wasn't really any way for me to play.
And then in March of 2017, after a long slumber and hiatus.
Yeah, exactly. No,
but seriously though, the Breath of the Wild, when it came out in March of 2017, the fact that it was going to be playable on the Switch, which felt like a real gaming machine, unlike the Wii and unlike the Wii U. The Wii U,
no gimmicks.
The Wii U, by the way, was supposed to get a mainline Zelda game. The mainline Zelda game that came out for Wii U was Breath of the Wild. And that came out basically right before they decided to say the Wii U is dead. Okay? Ugh. And so that's, if you're going to make a Nintendo console and you're not going to have a flagship Zelda game on there early on in the cycle, or at least midway through the cycle, it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
Okay? And... yeah. And so the Nintendo Switch comes out, and I remember Breath of the Wild comes out, and the reviews are just pouring in, man. Just like flying in, and I'm telling myself, at this point I had sold my Wii U, and I was like, I'm not going to go pick up a Wii U just to play this game. And finding a Switch, I have a better chance of finding like gold in the middle of the sidewalk than picking up a Nintendo Switch right now. Like they were just super rare. They were nowhere to be found. So a few months went by, and one day in August, I just went to the store. I was like, you know what? I'm going to look at the video game section and see if they've got one of those Nintendo Switch things in. Sure enough, they did. And I think it was shortly before you and I went to Gen Con, because I don't know if you remember, you came to my apartment, and we ended up playing some Mario Kart.
That's right.
On the little Switch screen. And so anyway, picked up this Switch because I wanted to play. I wanted to teach my son how to play Mario Kart. He had been watching some Mario videos on YouTube, and I was like, "Oh, let's get this kid into this thing." He was really young at the time. I think he was like 3.
Yeah.
And anyway, pick up the Switch and get Breath of the Wild. And started playing it, and I tell you what, it was like becoming a kid again, man. Playing this game took me back to all the memories of getting into Legend of Zelda for the first time, playing Ocarina of Time for the first time, being like the first big one I really played and got into heavily. But then, of course, like the Wind Waker memories start flooding back. And it just felt like finally a proper Zelda game. And I think that Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword, those were perfectly fine games. But I think they were for the audience of people who really liked the Wii, which wasn't a ton of people. Even though they sold a ton of those, not a bunch of people were sitting around on Saturday afternoon playing their Wii. And so it felt so good to have this. It was it's a great game design. A big departure from what a Zelda game was historically.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways kind of sad. Kind of sad we didn't get those big temples, those big dungeons. And in other ways kind of good, because this thing had super mainstream success. Like explosive success, Breath of the Wild. There are so many people who I have talked to who've played Breath of the Wild because, first of all, they were interested in the Switch. Never really interested in video games, but the Switch was intriguing, and Breath of the Wild was intriguing. And so they played it, and they played this game. They're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And so, anyway, I love this, and where I'm at right now with Breath of the Wild, I finished the game a while ago, but I'm actually currently playing it quite a bit because my son Leo is very, very, very into the game. And so he's not really into it. Like, I've tried starting a new game with him and starting from the beginning and, like, getting him thinking it through. But he's way more interested in playing my file, where I've got the Master Sword and the Master Shield and, you know, all my gear statted up and all that stuff.
It's fully decked out.
So So what we've been doing is I've been trying to teach him all the various different mechanics of the game, teaching him like, oh, hey, like if you light this on fire, you can jump with your parasail and it'll float you up in the air. The heat'll make you go higher in the air, trying to teach him like principles of science that the game implements, which is fascinating.
That's cool.
And so it's really fun because now I'm seeing my son get into these games and be just taken into this world of Hyrule. And so to have that experience and have that come full circle in life is just really, really neat, man. It's really cool.
Oh, I'm sure. That is really cool, man. It's funny you mentioned playing the Switch because of a coworker, a friend from work, actually just lent me her Switch for the time being. She told me, she's like, we just don't play it that much. I know you just really like Zelda and you really want to play Breath of the Wild, so you can just borrow it for a while. So I've got it hooked up. It's ready to go. I have to charge it still, but I'm gearing up for a weekend or some time that I have free to sit down. And I've played the beginning of Breath of the Wild is the thing. I've played the first part of it where you're kind of stuck on that plateau and you got to get off. Mm-hmm. So I've gotten to off that part and I just started my adventure. So I need to get back to that part now with this new file. But it's funny that I'm so excited to play this game. And even before playing the first part of it, I was so excited to play it because I just heard that it was like a real Zelda game again. It was an open world Zelda game. And I'm huge into open world games. I love Skyrim. I like when you can kind of just go out and create and forge your own path and be who you want to be. Even though it's Zelda, so you kind of have to kind of stick to the legend of it and the lore, and you have to be Link, but there's definitely no downside there because Link's an awesome character. The idea of an open world and the Zelda world coming together, it got me excited. And just I'd read and I talked to people about how it kind of retains a lot of the charm from the original ones that made them so lovable, like the sense of adventure and riding your horse and just kind of fighting some character. Like they have the little Skull Kids. They have those guys back, which I remember walking at night in the game and they popped up. I'm like, oh my gosh, these guys are in it. Like it took me all the way back to being 8 years old again, where you fight them for the first time and you're kind of terrified because you're like, oh my gosh, skeletons. And now I'm like, oh yay, skeletons.
Yeah.
So it's already hit a lot of my like nostalgia. So I'm just kind of excited to see more about it and all the new stuff that does, because I wouldn't ever want Zelda to be the same Zelda game when I played 8. Like I would want it to grow and mature and to be more than that. I always appreciate games that kind of give a look back to where they came from and where they kind of started their fan base at. So it seems like one of those games from people I've talked with. It's like one of those games. So as someone who's only played the first part, the very, very, very first part of the game, I'm truly excited to hop into it.
Yeah, it's a really good one. It's a lot of fun. It's quite addicting. And it's nice because it's on the Switch, because as long as you put it in sleep mode, it just pauses right where you're at, and you just, next time you turn it on, it's right where you left off. So it's one of those games that's cool. Really nice to play on the Switch because of how easy it is to jump in and out.
And the Switch is a cool system too.
It is.
Like I haven't really dived it, like haven't gotten into it too much, but like it's cool that you can just play handheld or you can just play it on your TV.
Yeah, It's a really neat concept, and it's really great for kids. My kids love the Switch, and I love playing the Switch with them. Like, I'm thankful that the Switch is the console for kids, that I'm a parent now, and I wasn't a parent during the Wii days, because that would have been rough for me.
Yeah.
Can only do so many virtual bowling games, man. It's
And the boxing games, too.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's getting a little late here out in the Ohioville and Pittsburghville. And I think we're going to skip a closing segment today, man, and just kind of sign off now, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It was a good one. I love always talking about Zelda. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
And there it is, another one in the books. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Parallel Quest. Please be sure to check out our website, steellakestudio.com. Thank you to Jake Butler for providing our bumper music, and we will see you next time on Parallel Quest.